So our very first episode here, oh, I don't know if I told you the name yet. The Fresh Press Podcast. The
Fresh Press Podcast.
By Juicing Systems.
Season 1, Episode 0.
Episode 0. we have Nathan. How do you pronounce your name? Riddle?
Riddell.
Yeah. Riddell. What's your title? Sales?
Sales manager?
Sales.
Sales, yeah.
Sales everything at Juicing Systems. I know that you didn't grow up in this area. Where were you growing up?
I grew up in small town Manitoba.
Okay.
So I grew up on a grain farm, and I guess, yeah, agriculture was always something that has been a big part of my life. And so when I was 17, I got the opportunity to move to Kelowna actually for a year. And I lived out there and finished my high school out there and kind of fell in love with the Okanagan Valley and central British Columbia and told myself I was going to wind up back out here.
Well, what was the first impression? Like, what was the, you know, the difference from when you grew up to come into the Okanagan Valley?
I mean, the mountains.
Yeah.
Hugely. Like, where I grew up, it is as flat can get. We used to joke you could watch your dog run away for 5 days. Coming into Kelowna for the first time was, you know, the first time I'd really spent any appreciable amount of time in the mountains. And it's beautiful out here. Everything is gorgeous, and the outdoors has always been a big part of my life, so being able to get out into the mountains and hike and have all the lakes as close as they are was really awesome.
How did you get to like the industry? What was your first job there?
Agriculture in general, I grew up farming, and I did lots of custom processing work and stuff back in Manitoba as part of our farm, our family farm. And then when I moved out here, I actually rented the place we live from Kristen and Remo. And I met Kristen the day we came to look at places, and she'd asked me what I was planning to do for work, and I didn't really have anything solid.
Okay.
I just knew I wanted to be out here. So we moved, and I just was going to figure it out on the way. And she asked me if, with my history working in ag, if I could like drive a truck and trailer, and I told her I could. And
check.
Yeah, she asked me if I wanted to try mobile juicing.
Okay.
Which, to be honest, I did not picture what the mobile juicing trailer is when she asked me that question.
Was it the same like size and everything like there is right now?
Yeah. Okay. That was the year they got the current trailer. It was the year that I came out here to work. And I was thinking much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going down to Penticton and we were set up at this like packing house in the south end of the valley doing cherries, and just rocking up and seeing it was wild. It's impressive how much fruit that thing eats.
yeah. How long did you last on the truck?
I was actually the last one standing. So I worked right through until early November for them that year. Everyone else had kind of carried on their way as you do with seasonal work, and I didn't have anything kind of set in stone that I wanted to do after that. I was really enjoying the season, and Remo actually wound up coming down to help with the last little bit of the pressing for the year. And that's kind of when I got to know Remo, and we got to talking, and he asked me a bit about my background in sales, and I, you know, explained to him what I'd done for work before, and he asked me if I was interested in potentially selling the equipment.
Okay.
And so we wrapped up the juicing season, and I took a little over a week off and then started up with Juicing Systems.
How long was that?
How long ago was that? That was in November of 2017.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is that?
Five years.
It's not 2020 anymore.
No. Time flies.
Yeah. 5 years. Do you have an itch of going back to some sort of agriculture, or is like sales...
It was really nice to be able to marry the two, to be honest. Agriculture is always something I've been passionate about. And when I talked to Kristen about sort of how she got into the mobile juicing and why she started it and the whole story, you know, she had about seeing all the food waste in the valley here with all the orchards and the cull fruit and the stuff that's not like pretty enough to go to the store, really. And finding a way to process that and give it a life outside of a landfill, that was really special, I thought. And so having the opportunity to help people all over North America take what's essentially a waste product and turn it into food was huge for me. Like, food sustainability is something I really care about. And then, you know, being involved in the egg industry out here is just kind of a beautiful bonus to that.
I mean, come on. We'll do a couple of shots so people can see the surroundings. But yeah, no. Yeah. What did you study
university? In university. Yeah. I did a psychology degree with a sociology minor.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was very good at sailing. Teaches you about people's wants and needs and motivations a little bit, no?
Yeah, I think it helps you understand people. And I think the better you understand people, the better able you are to relate to them and to help them in the long run with, you know, like, to use the context of selling, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite book that you discovered, a person that you discovered in university?
Nothing that springs to mind. Not as a favorite, no.
No, Sashuniskin or something, the Russian.
No firm favorites, honestly. It opened my mind to a lot of different ideas, for sure. But I can't say there was one in particular that, like, formed a philosophy, I guess.
Okay. Because that's where people kind of go off the rails a little bit, but it won't go down that line. So, like, sales. What do you think sales is fulfilling in your life right now?
I've always enjoyed helping people. And okay. I think that, especially in the context of, like, the kind of sales work we do, I think back to being on the other side of it, working on a farm, needing processing equipment, and trying to sort of untangle everything that was out there and make significant decisions, purchasing decisions, right? That are a huge chunk of your investment in your business. And I've always understood how much we rely on that. Not only the equipment, but the people who provide it and service it and who give us the advice that ultimately leads to us making that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, being able to kind of take that knowledge that I gained through experience working the equipment and translate that into being able to help people decide if these machines are a good fit for them sort of fills that, like, desire to help people and also to serve an industry that I'm really passionate about.
Do you see that? Lost my train of thought. let me think here. I got a good one, but I got lost in what you were saying. Since you began, so 5 years ago, what was the biggest shock that, like, learning about the industry that has changed in 5 years? Like, the biggest innovations that you've seen or the biggest pain points that you saw 5 years ago that you see maybe have changed now or stay the same?
That's a really good question. The cider industry has grown phenomenally in the last 5 years. And so in terms of that industry in specific, I think that huge strides have been made in terms of building resources and helping makers get their product to people in some way, shape, or form, right? There's better understanding and handle of how cider's defined. There's far more people making it and a wonderful community that, you know, networks at every turn and gives each other a leg up all along the way. In the fruit industry in general, I think the biggest surprise to me was, like, just how much of the fruit that's not considered to meet grade goes to waste. And I think that with every system that we sell, we're saving a bunch of that cull or you know, below grade fruit from winding up on the ground, rotting or in landfills or...
That's how it was treated before? Like... If they weren't juicing before, like, if it's not enough to put it, it's not pretty enough to put it in the grocery store, kind of like, what do you do with it? Let it rot or kind of toss it? Or
it gets sold as seconds for, like, juice grade or yeah, oftentimes things like cherries, especially being one of the big industries here. You know, if that fruit is spoiling quickly mm-hmm. and there isn't a market for it, it's going to go to landfill.
Wow.
And so being able to take that fruit and turn it into a shelf-stable product and to help people to do that was massive for me and a huge shock when I moved out here. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I could see how, like, thinking of it that way, how big for that farm or for that orchard it is to be able to, you know, call mobile juicing or getting your own equipment, and that stuff that we're throwing away now becomes revenue.
Absolutely. I had a conversation very recently with a client of ours who was talking about how their vision for their orchard is zero waste, and, you know, asking them what that looked like. There's still, you know, 1 million pounds of fruit a year that is considered a waste stream product. Like, there's no home for it. And so, you know, every product they can develop, every avenue they can chase, whether it's making a juice or making a cider or making a jam or a jelly or something preservable with that fruit, is, you know, less of that product that they're essentially paying to haul to the garbage.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like as a business, like if you're throwing a lot of stuff and now you can use it as revenue, and now with multiple, like, people opening up their mind and social media coming in, I see a lot of younger, maybe third generation, maybe they're in high school, like, taking it to TikTok and filming themselves in their apple orchards, like their great-grandfather had, and teaching about it, and just, like, showing the whole industry, which is farming, any kind of food growing that, back in the day, anybody in a city doesn't even understand what it is, like the effort that it takes to grow food. Like, some of the stuff Rima was telling me that, or like a video I saw about charities, how when it rains, if they're not dry quick enough, they break it. Yeah. You can't sell that. So sometimes they throw their helicopter and fly a couple times to kind of get the water off the cherries. Yeah. And to me, that's like the expense of that gasoline, everything, just to save the face of the cherry so they can sell it. Like,
absolutely.
That's insane.
What do you pay for a premium looking pound of cherries in the grocery store in Toronto?
I have no idea. I would ask my wife because she loves cherries, but
It's a huge value crop, and that's why flying those helicopters over the fields makes sense, because that pales in comparison to the loss that you'll incur if your whole crop spoils.
Yeah.
And then you're racing a clock, because once that skin on the cherry breaks, it's a matter of days, you know, maybe weeks, but usually days before those cherries are on their way to being spoiled. And so even to make juice out of something like that, you then have to be able to get it off the field and processed very quickly. And it becomes a question of, is the cost of harvesting this in such a short time frame worth bringing this crop in and sorting it? You know, because it all costs. But yeah, I think, you know, to get at your sort of initial point, we are seeing that with the new generation of farmers. We're seeing a desire to change old practices and to diversify and to, I think, also find sort of a sense of individualism and a little bit of self-expression and a way to celebrate what your family's been doing for 100 years with your own sort of spin on it, so that you can find your passion there. And for a lot of people, that's making cider. For a lot of people, that's, you know, putting up a sort of agritourism kind of facility on their farm and having, you know, fresh cider pressed on site and having the preserves and the apple pies and the corn mazes and the pumpkin patches and the you-pick fruit. I think people take a lot of pride in the history of their farms too, right? I see a lot with East Coast clients who, you know, some of those farms have been there for 130 years, you know, and they're the fifth or sixth generation of people to be on it.
That's crazy, because I don't know. I grew up in a rural area where it's like a lot more farming, you know, like corn, pigs, maybe chickens. And I'm starting to think I'm at around that age where, like, you go to Facebook, see what little high school people were doing and where did they stay or didn't go. And most of the people that I knew that their parents had a farm, some sort of farm, are just some, let's say like 70% stayed, but didn't continue on the farm. Didn't stay there working, you know, maybe as a engineer on the, it was a refinery, oil refinery nearby that town. So working for that company, but not really staying and continuing the farm. Do you think, do you see a lot of like younger generations, upcoming generations not continuing and staying in there?
Yeah, there's certainly a movement away from it. I mean, to use my own sort of experience, I guess, if you stay with the farm and you say, this is what I'm going to do, you really marry the farm. That is, it's not a job, it's a lifestyle, right? Your life is dictated by the trees or the plants or the animals that you care for. When you need to be there, you have to be there. It doesn't matter what else is going on in your life or the world. It's about taking care of and nurturing that thing that you've worked the rest of the year to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's demanding and admirable for the people who stay. There's also sort of the question of scale, right? What used to work for our parents or our grandparents isn't really a big enough farm in a lot of ways and in a lot of senses without diversifying in some way to pay the bills. And so you look at, you know, things like the price of a pound of apples, it has not increased with the cost of living. So those same trees your grandpa planted that make the same number of apples now don't make enough apples for you to sell to pay all your bills. Because everything else has gotten more expensive.
Yeah.
So you need to either be able to acquire more land, trees, property, or you need to find more value in that product that you're producing. And that's where I think a lot of that diversification I was talking about a little earlier comes into play. People are looking for new revenue streams and ways to cut waste and do more with what they have. But if you look at, you know, where I come from in grain farming, farms are five times the size that they were when I started farming with my dad, never mind when my dad started farming. And you have to farm that much land just to make the same sort of revenue at the end of the day.
Yeah. And that's why where you see the, like I say, like juicing for the fruit orchards. And do we see a lot of people coming in where first time juicers, or maybe they tried it a couple times and now they're looking to scale something, that a machine that can actually, it's not so much effort. What are the main people coming into juicing, new people coming into juicing?
Yeah, I mean, so there's lots of people who are reaching out to us who want to start making cider. They've got some fruit trees, they sell their fruit for the fresh market, but you know, they'd also like to be able to offer something else from their farm, yeah, whether that's apple butters or whether that's jams and jellies or whether that's juice, you know, that's definitely a chunk of the market. There's a lot of people who've been making sweet cider for a very long time with, you know, smaller or more dated equipment, and they're ready to replace it and they want something that's going to be continuous. It's not going to be this batch process that they used to do. It's going to give them room to scale. It's going to let them press maybe more juice than they even need to use and open up some opportunities for their neighbors to come and have their fruit pressed as well. So I'd say, you know, at the scale of equipment we sell, that's where a lot of our people are kind of, they're stepping up from an older press. And then, yeah, we have some people that are just wholly new to the juice making game too, that are, you know, getting into cold press juicing or wanting to kind of scale that up to a commercial level and looking for equipment there too.
Is there anything that I'll let you drink your water. Anything that you're excited about in the industry that's coming up?
It's all really exciting to me.
Yeah. That's the right answer.
it's kind of hard to choose. It's all really exciting to me.
Yeah. Okay, we'll stick to that one.
I don't know if there's anything in particular that jumps out.
Any like favorite moments that you've had in the past 5 years helping a client?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a handful. I mean, one of the first systems I sold to a cider maker / winemaker, when I started with juicing systems, brought in a sort of different product for them and for their area, which was bag and box juice. which is something that I thought was really, really cool when I started making it with Okanagan Mobile Juicing when I moved out here. And the reason I love it is because, you know, a lot of sweet cider or apple juice that you get like from a farm pressed was something you get in a half gallon or a gallon jug, and you know, it's good for a week or something. Mm-hmm. You bring it home, you put it in the fridge, and you try and drink it all before it goes bad. And the bag and box thing was so cool to me because like we process it, we pasteurize it, we hot fill it into these bags, and we see like 6 to 9 months of shelf life.
Wow.
Unrefrigerated, unopened, depending on pH and a couple other things. And once you've opened it and put it in the fridge, you still have that box in there for like a month and a half, 2 months, you know? So it's not like a race to drink this mm-hmm. juice you brought home. You can enjoy it for longer. And they kind of took a leap of faith in and thought the product was really cool too. And they decided, yeah, we're going to purchase a system to do this. And I actually, it's funny you ask, because I got an email from them this morning and they're looking for a bigger bag and box filler. They're okay. Like, we could be doing, you know, thousands of gallons a week of this sweet cider. Like it's taken off. People love it. People want it. And so being able to bring something like that to a company and for them to be able to just like not have to do this like weekly pressing schedule or worry about like the stuff they have expiring, they just crank out juice as they need it. And it's good to just sit there. And so it's better for their clients. It's better for them as a business. It, you know, again, is just less waste at the end of the day. And it's been a smashing success for them. And there's a few clients that come to mind who have the exact same story. You know, I don't have to have fridges plugged in and running at every one of the tills in my fruit stands. I just have a stack of these by the checkout and people can grab them as they want. Or I don't have to worry about how much juice I'm making every week. I just process what I need to process for the fruit and I put that juice to the side and I know it's going to go, right? So that's definitely one of my favorites. Another one was a cold press juice client of ours that I think just an increased yield from their ginger alone that they're processing, their press paid for itself in like months. And so, you know, for them, they're over the moon, they're ecstatic because they have this super expensive produce and now they're getting 5, 10, in some cases, 15% more yield out of it than they were with the other way they were pressing. And it's just been a smash hit, right? Like client in Toronto comes to mind who used to press like 4 days a week and presses one now. You know, they're saving on overhead. They have more time to dedicate to other aspects of their business. They're just happier. And that's the win for me is calling a client 6 months, a year, 2 years later and having them say, yeah, this sort of changed the way we do it. It transformed our business or it gave me more time to dedicate to like this part of the business that I'm super passionate about.
Or just spend with time with family. Like,
yeah, absolutely. A cider maker of ours who said, you know, like his wife's way happier because he gets home earlier, now, which is awesome. That's a huge win.
Anything you want to add before we close it up?
Honestly, I appreciate you sitting down, taking the time to chat. I'm looking forward to many future episodes of this podcast.
Maybe you interviewing some other people.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back anytime and absolutely happy to ask some questions. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. We're done.
Sweet.